Blog Talk Radio.
Here I am, again in this city, with a fistful of dollars. And baby, you better believe
I'm back in New York. I'm back.
You're listening to the Yanks Go Yard Podcast. Here's your host, Ricky Keeler.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Yanks Schoolyard Radio Show. I'm your host and your staff writer, Richie Keeler. Thank you for joining us on a Monday night. Yankees, of course, on an off day, but a lot of news has happened since we were last on the air on Thursday night. Of course, on Friday, Mark Teixeira announcing his retirement, effective at the end of the season. And on Sunday morning, the big press conference, Alex Rodriguez and the Yankees talking about how A-Rod, his last game is going to be Friday. The Yankees will then release him. And then he's going to end up being advisor to Hal Steinbrenner and help out as an instructor with the minor leagues. All in all, I think the Yankees came up with a good way to sort of ease Alex Rodriguez out of the situation. Because, look, it was evident that A-Rod was not going to play. He didn't play yesterday, so I was a little disappointed about. I mean, if you're going to have the press conference, at least let him play that day. But at least they signed an end to the solution. Yankees do take 2 out of 3 against the Indians, so give them credit. Strong series there, although Andrew Miller did get the save on Saturday, so that had to put a little salt in the wound a little bit. You know, the Yankees got that good package. Clint Frazier had his first home run getting the other day against Lucas Giolito. You had Justice Sheffield in Tampa strike out 11 in his first start. So far, those prospects, Penn Heller, a 5-out save the other day. Those prospects have been working out at this point, at least in their respective minor league system. Coming up in a second, Harrison Martyr, frequent co-host and staff writer here at Yanks Yard, will join me. We'll get all into the share, all into A-Rod for the first half hour of the show. And then coming up at 9:05, Noah Small from Botox Injection joins me. We'll look ahead to the upcoming series at Fenway Park between the Yankees and Red Sox that begins tomorrow. Boston coming off a long, and I mean long, West Coast trip. And they've been struggling a little bit. Plus, we'll get to the standpoint of how the Red Sox view what the Yankees are doing right now with all their trades. And all the retirements that are coming up, either to share at the end of the year, A-Rod on Friday. We want to get you involved, of course, in the show. Send us your thoughts on Teixeira or A-Rod. How do you remember their times in pinstripes? You can give us a call, 347-324-5455. Again, 347-324-5455. You can tweet us on Twitter, at YGY Radio Show, at YankSchoolyardFS, or tweet me on Twitter directly, at RickNader555. So without further ado, let's get right into the discussion. I'm pleased again to join by frequent co-host and staff writer here at Yanks Go Yard. He's helped me out. We've talked about A-Rod for so long. It's only fitting we talk about A-Rod one more time. Harrison Martyr is here. Harrison, welcome. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, Ricky. Always a pleasure to join you on the show.
Absolutely happy to have you. Of course, as I said, you and I have, for the last 2 years or so, talked about A-Rod a lot. Whether it be for good reasons or bad reasons, we've found a way to talk about it. So your reaction to what we'll get into A-Rod first, and we'll do Teixeira for those wondering at home how it's going to go for the first half hour. What do you make of the press conference? How do you make the way the Yankees handled this situation? Let's go with that first.
Well, I wasn't very surprised at the move that was made and what was said at the press conference, really. I think that it was very evident that Alex Rodriguez was on his way out of pinstripes this season. It was really a question of whether he was going to be released, whether he was going to be traded, or whether he was going to retire. So I didn't really find it surprising that when the Yankees called a press conference of that magnitude, that it was going to be a big announcement about Alex Rodriguez leaving the team. Now, I think that retiring the way that he did obviously is not the way that he envisioned it. He spoke about it in the press conference that every athlete wants to end his or her career really going out on top. And the way that he's played this season and the lack of play that he's seen really down the stretch here is not the way that you would expect a player of Alex Rodriguez's caliber to go out. However, I think that really now is the best time for him to step away. The Yankees are a team in transition. They've made that incredibly obvious with all of the moves that they've made heading into the trade deadline, with moving all of these veteran players and acquiring all those prospects who you spoke, some of them you touched upon earlier in the opening of the show. So I think that especially with all of that, coupled with Mark Teixeira realizing that it's also time for him to put his spikes up and retire as well, I think Alex Rodriguez finally really saw the writing on the wall, and it is time for him to finally call his very long and illustrious career, put it to an end at this point.
Absolutely, and you read like John Heyman from today's Knuckleball, which is on Fanrag, or Ken Rosenthal from Fox Sports Nobody Network, you read their accounts, which are both must-reads of this whole situation. You read Heyman, I'll point out, not that it was better than Rosenthal's, I don't believe that, both are really good. But pointing out about how, in this case, you had Hal Steinbrenner meeting with Alex Rodriguez Wednesday, told him, and quote, that at-bats be fewer and far between, he get all the $27 million, and just the fact that A-Rod can get all his money. There was, everyone talking about buyout, settlement. No, A-Rod was going to get the money. And he should get the money. The Yankees owed him the money. He should get it. I don't buy, and we had Evan Halfheimberger, our co-editor, does really good stuff, wrote an article about A-Rod. He was, should have a chance at 700. In my mind, the Yankees don't owe him anything other than $27 million. Because of all the stuff from a couple years ago, suing the team doctor, suing baseball, I don't feel, and again, I think both sides have moved on from that, but I think in the back of their mind, the Yankees say, well, we don't really owe you anything. I didn't have a problem. I know where their fans out there had a problem. They are not going to get a chance at 700. Maybe he will down the road. We'll see. But I didn't really, did you believe, Harrison, the Yankees owed it to A-Rod to give him a chance at 700?
No, I don't feel that they really owe Alex Rodriguez the opportunity to get to that 700th home run. It would be a great thing for the game of baseball, I think, for the Yankees, for Alex Rodriguez himself, if he were able to get to that mark. Obviously, it is a huge accomplishment. Very few players in the game have been able to do that. And obviously, Alex Rodriguez would love that. I think a lot of Yankees fans would love that. But I don't feel that the team necessarily owes that to him. I mean, he lost out on an entire season a couple of years ago on his own accord. I mean, he, as much as I you know, still do like A-Rod, let me make that clear. I still do, you know, I like Alex Rodriguez. I am an Alex Rodriguez fan, albeit not as big of a one as I was before the whole steroid, instances happened with him. But I think that, you know, the Yankees, they don't owe that to him. They really don't. And he is, you know, he's a grown man. He was when he took the steroids, and he needed to sort of pay for those actions. And he had that opportunity where if he had a whole nother season that he lost a couple of years ago in 2014, you know, maybe he'd already be at 700 home runs already. He's only four away. So I don't necessarily view it as the Yankees owe him that opportunity. It would be great. It would be a huge marketing opportunity for the Yankees as well, which is so odd to say about, you know, marketing with Alex Rodriguez. But it would be huge in that sense for the team. But the Yankees have so much money and so much popularity anyway that, you know, not being able to sell a couple hundred thousand 700 home run shirts for Alex Rodriguez isn't going to be a big deal. So, no, I don't feel that the team really owes him that opportunity.
Exactly. And to me, the cheating was never really – like I'm someone who would, if I had a Hall of Fame vote for Barry Bonds, vote for Roger Clemens in the Hall of Fame. I've said that. I've done it. I'm like IBWA now that I've done that. To me, the lying, the suing, it always rubbed me the wrong way on Alex. And he gets a bad red rap in some cases. Obviously, 2009, we'll get into all that in a little bit. But I think from all that, I don't really feel that, first of all, they don't owe him anything. Because you look at the home run mark, when they gave him that contract, they thought the home run mark was going to mean something. And it didn't when he first admitted to taking performance-enhancing drugs. So from that point, really, the 700, I mean, doesn't mean a lot. It just means more home run bonuses. It doesn't mean, the home run record does not mean what it used to be. So to me, again, I don't think they owed him anything. I understand people who do think that. But if the Yankees are a team in transition, he shouldn't be playing. And you saw that even, hey, when they took him out for Ben Gamble in the bunt situation on Monday, when they pinch hit him on Tuesday, when they didn't play him against – the telltale sign was when they didn't play him against Cologne on Thursday, when he had great numbers against Cologne, albeit from years back. When you don't play him in that kind of matchup, you're probably not ever going to play him. And that's where the writing was kind of on the wall. before Saturday's press conference, or Sunday's press conference, Saturday's announcement of the Sunday press conference. Do you believe Harrison A-Rod is done?
Yeah, I really do. I think it would be hard for me to see Alex Rodriguez signing with an American League contending team right now just because of all of the marketing and PR headache that he would put on a team at this point. I mean, if A-Rod was going out right now and he was hitting like the way he was last year and was putting up the 33 home runs and 86 RBIs that we saw back in 2015, first of all, he wouldn't be hanging him up. But second of all, there would be a lot of teams out there in the American League who would love to pencil him into the middle of the lineup and their DH hole. However, it's 2016. He only has 9 home runs this season, only 29 RBIs, and he's barely hitting over 200. He's hitting 204. So I really don't think that with all of the emotion that we saw from him at that press conference, with all the tumultuousness that has gone on with the Alex Rodriguez saga pretty much his entire career. I mean, he has been in baseball incredibly since 1994. He was 18 years old. He's 41 years old now. So, I mean, he has gone through almost everything that you can go through as a professional baseball player. And I would be surprised, because I think that a lot of the teams in the American League who are contending, you know, the Bostons, the Texas Rangers, they have made moves to solidify the middle of their lineup. But I really don't think there's going to be many teams out there who are going to be looking for a 41-year-old DH who's hitting 204 this season.
I think he's done this year. The only way I would maybe see it is, let's say next year, that team that in South Florida, Miami Marlins, everybody's pointing to this, where they give him a shot. Barry Bonds is his hitting coach. Is the hitting coach there? I don't think he'll play again either, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Marlins gave him a call with the South Florida connection, the home run chase, and Barry Bonds being there to help him. But that would be the only way where I would see that happening. Talking with Harrison Martyr of the Yanks Yard, our staff writer slash frequent co-host here. I'm your host and your staff, Ricky Keeler. Getting into the A-Rod news, we'll get to the share retirement depending on the end of the season in a second. Before we move on to Teixeira, Harrison, the one thing I loved about the press conference yesterday was the Brian Cashman dropping the ring on the table and saying, I'm going to remember Alex for 2009, which I think a lot of Yankee fans are going to remember him for. How do you remember A-Rod?
I think that I remember A-Rod as possibly the most polarizing figure in Major League Baseball, maybe history, but definitely in my lifetime that I've been around. I mean, no other player really has kind of straddled the line, I think, between player, pariah, celebrity, hero, quite like Alex Rodriguez has. I mean, I've been to games at Yankee Stadium over the years where he has been applauded so fervently that, you know, you would think that it was Jeter coming off, or that it was Lou Gehrig or Babe Ruth. And I've also been to games on the road where Alex Rodriguez has been mercilessly booed, where Alex Rodriguez has been booed and called things that I can't repeat on this show, and called a cheater and a liar and things that are just, you would never expect to hear at a family event like a professional baseball game. So I think that the way that I'm going to remember Alex Rodriguez is really a guy who played so many different roles in his career. But I agree with you that what Brian Cashman said about 2009 is correct. Alex Rodriguez was an integral part of that World Series championship team. He came up huge for the Yankees in that postseason. It was really incredible. A guy who had struggled for so long in the postseason, had so many well-documented postseason struggles, finally came through in that season. But I think that A-Rod really is one of the most polarizing figures, not only in baseball, but I think in sports of the 21st century, a guy who is beloved by so many and is hated by so many, really unlike any other player in professional sports today.
Definitely being the fact, I agree, he's one of the more polarizing, not the most polarizing figure in baseball the last couple of decades. He had good moments with the Yankees, of course, MVP in 05, MVP in 07, 54 home runs, made the All-Star team from 04 to 2011. So So obviously he had good moments with the Yankees. To me, I mean, it's tough for you to avoid looking at the lying and the cheating, and maybe that will help him over time as we look at the steroid era a little bit more differently. But I said again, I think it differentiates A-Rod with the steroid era from what the extracurriculars were with the Biogenesis situation and all the suing that he did. I look at 09 too. And remember, before 09, we looked at A-Rod as a very poor player in the clutch. He had bad moments in 04, whether it was trying to knock the ball out of Bronson Arroyo's gloves in that collapse against the Red Sox. In 2006, hitting .71 in the ALDS against Detroit, 133 in 05 against the Angels. Against Cleveland in 07, 267 with a home run in Game 4, but the Yankees were out of the game by then for the most part. But to me, when you look back at 09, the moment I'll remember A-Rod for, it's not really the he had great ones against the Phillies, the home run against Hamill. He had the big base hit in Game 4 that helped the Yankees win that game and eventually go up 3-1 in the series. I remember Game 2 against the Twins. The minute A-Rod hit that home run off Joe Nathan in the ninth inning to tie that game and the Yankees wanted to win it next was on Sechero walk-off, you could tell the confidence was back with A-Rod because he had the big home run against the Angels early on in that ALCS. Something changed in A-Rod's clutch factor, if you could have that change. That's the moment I remember A-Rod for, because that was one of the biggest home runs he's ever hit in his life, I believe, postseason-wise. Because there was wonder, like, can this guy really perform in the postseason? And fairly or unfairly, he was being criticized for it. But he came up with his big moments. He got his one ring, and you have to tip your cap to him for that. Did have his other postseason struggles. He hit below 200 in four series after that 09. The only series above 200 he hit was 273 against the Twins in 08 in 2010. So he had his postseason struggles, but he had that 09, which was memorable. And the Yankees, as Brian Cashman said yesterday, don't win that World Series without him, and I really believe that. Let's take a look now at Mark Teixeira. Of course, he announced the retirement on Friday, so we can get a chance to talk about it on the show. Came really as a matter of surprise. Teixeira was going to be a free agent at the end of the year anyway, and it was a wonder of the way he was playing this year with all the injuries, being only 200 right now, if he was going to get another big contract. He talked about playing, I think it was five more years in the offseason. So let's look at Harrison from the Teixeira perspective. Is his tie in pinstripes in your mind a success or a failure?
Well, I think that Mark Teixeira's time in pinstripes is it was complicated. You know, I know that's not the answer you were looking for, but I think if I had to put an answer to it, I would say that it was a success simply because of really, I think it comes down to the leadership that he had in the locker room. He was a great defensive player. I've always said that. I've been a huge advocate of Mark Teixeira's for a long time. I was thrilled when the Yankees brought him in 2009. He had a big year, his first year in pinstripes that year, 39 home runs and 122 runs batted in on the way to that World Series championship. And I think that Mark Teixeira's defense was still there all those years, you know, as he began to keep getting hurt towards the end of his career. And what you were speaking about, you know, with Teixeira, it's coming as more of a surprise than Alex Rodriguez is. I would agree with you 110%, Ricky. I think this one came really out of left field for Mark Teixeira. I really didn't see this coming. He obviously was done with his contract this year. He was able to become a free agent. I thought maybe there would be a team, possibly even at the trade deadline this year, that would take a flyer on Teixeira that would say, you know what, we even a National League team, you know, he can play first base for us every day. He's still a Gold Glove caliber first baseman. But, you know, Mark Teixeira at his press conference, I thought he made some very good points that he said, you know, I would much rather spend my time at my children's, you know, school plays and dance recitals rather than on a training table in Detroit. And you know what? I really can't blame him. I really can't blame him for that at all. Mark Teixeira has always been a class act player through and through. He has 400-plus home runs. He was an excellent defensive first baseman. Did he have an all-time career for the Yankees? No. Did he really live up to that whole, you know, 8-year, $180 million contract? No. But who can? You know, who can live up to a contract like that goes so long. And, you know, I think that a lot of us would have signed up for, you know, a couple of off years with Teixeira. I don't think most of us really expected Mark to sort of break down and be as fragile as he's been over the past couple of seasons. But, you know, he had a number of years where he hit over 30 home runs for the Yankees. He had four seasons of 30-plus home runs in pinstripes. He drove in over 100 runs, over 100 runs, in three seasons back-to-back-to-back in 2009, 2010, and 2011. So Mark certainly had his moments, but I think in the end he made a very smart decision that, hey, this game is beating me up. And I think that his career in pinstripes was successful, you know, to a point. I think that he had his moments with the Yankees, but he certainly fizzled off at the end to no fault of his own, really.
Looking back, you would sign him to that 8-year, $180 million contract again if you were Brian Cashman in the winter of 2008.
That's an interesting question. You know, I don't know. If I'm going to say right now, I would say no. I think that if knowing everything that we know about Mark Teixeira at this point, with the amount of games that we've seen him play over the last couple of seasons, he only played 15 back in 2013, 111 last season before breaking his leg. I think that, you know, I'm not really a fan in general of these contracts that are for any player. That are so big where, you know, you give them these hundreds of millions of dollars over, you know, 8, 9, 10 years where you kind of say, you know what, these last two seasons, you know, the player's going to be 39, 40, or, you know, 41, 42, and we have to just eat those last 2 years of the contract to try and win a title. And, you know, Mark Teixeira was a big part of that 2009 championship team. But I think that if most Yankees fans are honest with you, when, you know, myself included, when they made those moves to bring in Sabathia and Teixeira and Burnett prior to the 2009 season, you would have thought that this team, you know, was ready for a couple of championships. And not to say that I'm not thrilled with that one, because I'm latching on to 2009 like it happened yesterday, the way that the Yankees are playing. But I think that it's really hard to sell anyone nowadays who is a baseball fan on a contract like that, because it's too much, I think, for anyone to really live up to that contract. So, no, I don't think I would sign Teixeira to as long of a contract. I would still sign him if I was Brian Cashman prior to the 2009 season, but I think the money and the length of the contract would be too much for the results that we've now seen. But obviously, Ricky, hindsight is 20/20.
I would sign that deal again. I think when I know that deal, and to your point, Harrison, I agree. It's tough to get anybody that contract now. The chair had all those injuries, and especially with the wrist, and even the knee injuries that he's had. To me, though, the defense, as you mentioned, I mean, he even showed it. When he made that play on Sunday, diving to the bag at first base to get Francisco Lindor, that's a typical Teixeira play. That's a play that when you watch other first basemen try to play, at least from the Yankees, you've seen Rusnak try to play. You've seen Chris Parmalee before he got hurt. Even Bird. I mean, Teixeira's defense is superb, to say the least. And I know his postseason, you can criticize him for just as much as A-Rod's postseason. He had only 13 RBIs and 3 home runs in the 8 series that he was in. He did have the Game 2 walk-off against the Twins, which is he was only hit 2 hits in that series. That was one of them. So he had his bad moments himself, but he also drew a lot of walks, 24 walks over 9 series, so he was getting on base. He was really always key with getting those walks in addition to the 400 home runs that he has as a switch hitter, which I think that makes it impressive in itself. I would sign a deal with him again, and to me, I think he was a success here. Had a great 2009 season, of course, when you look at 2011, 39 home runs. Even last year, before that injury that ended his season, he was an MVP candidate. 31 homers, 79 RBIs, was hitting close to 260. To me, he was a top 3 to 5 MVP candidate last year before that injury. So that really, you could have looked at Teixeira a little bit differently if he finished last year and had an MVP caliber year other than the runner-up that he had in 2009. To me, before we get to our last topic, I want to share something. If you don't follow me on Facebook, I shared my Mark Teixeira story, so I want to share it with you guys. I don't have an A-Rod story. I never met A-Rod. But back when Teixeira was with the Braves, when they were at Shea Stadium, I had the honor to attend batting practice with my family. That day, nobody from the Mets came over to sign an autograph. Nobody came to take a picture. Maybe it's just because of the side we were on. I don't really blame the Mets for that. The two guys who came over to our family to sign stuff and take pictures, Andrew Jones and Mark Teixeira, took a picture with Mark Teixeira, and then I became a fan of his instantly. When I found out he was going to the Yankees, I was thrilled, because remember, it was all talk about Boston, and I didn't really want to see Teixeira go to Boston. So to me, he was a fan of me. I was a fan of his the minute he got into Atlanta. He had a good year. He had a good couple of years with the Braves, too. 17 home runs when he got traded from Texas in the second half of 07, first half of 08, 20 home runs, 78 RBIs. He was a really strong hitter and then went to the Angels, of course, another trade. But to me, he's always a good defender, a solid hitter. And I think the Yankees will miss at least defense a lot in the years to come as they try to. We'll see what Greg Bird ends up being, but if, when he comes back healthy. But Mark Teixeira, I think, will be missed for his defense, his offensive thing, and as well his leadership. I think he was a big leader on that team, and they'll miss that leadership especially. Before we get to our last question here, Harrison, of course, with A-Rod done after Friday, the Yankees are going to need somebody to fill that roster spot, and they've got a lot of good candidates to fill that spot. Of course, everybody's talking about Aaron Judge, who had the grand slam yesterday. The dead center field was crushed. He's now back in the lineup. If you're Brian Cashman, does Aaron Judge get that call up on Saturday?
Absolutely. I think it's time to see what all the hype has been with Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge has been the guy that so many people within the Yankees organization and Yankees fans have been ready to see, a big, hulking power hitter who can be really, who, you know, plays right field, but really looks like he's got the frame and build for a designated hitter. And what better time to bring him up than right now, you know, after Friday when Alex Rodriguez will finish up his baseball career. I think that Aaron Judge, with the designated hitter position open and the opportunity now with the Yankees being this team in transition where these younger guys are going to get these at-bats down the stretch here through the dog days of August and September, why not see what the kid can do? I think it's time for Aaron Judge to come up to the bigs and see if he can start cranking home runs like he's been doing throughout his career in the minors. I think that Aaron Judge has to be the guy. I mean, now the Yankees have, you know, that plethora of prospects that they can bring up with all of the moves that they've made. But I think that Aaron Judge is the guy that Yankees fans have been dying to see. I think that the people in the organization are really ready to see him play. And I think that even though, you know, the Yankees are kind of out of contention right now and have sort of waved the white flag with the moves that they've made, I think that if you bring a guy like Judge up and he sort of, you know, he comes in and does well and starts putting a couple in the seats, it'll keep fans in the seats down the stretch here for the Yankees, because I know that attendance is going to be a little tough at the stadium with the team out of contention for the first time in a very long time. But I really think that Aaron Judge is a guy who needs to come up, and you need to see what he can do against big league pitching. You need to see if he's going to be able to catch up to some, you know, 95 plus mile hour gas. You need to see if he's going to be able to hit some breaking balls. I want to see if Aaron Judge looks comfortable at the big league level, because we know he is a big, strong man who could hit the ball a long way in the minor leagues. But now, with a designated hitter position open, he doesn't even have to worry about going out and playing the outfield. He could focus on doing what he does best, being a big, big man and hitting the ball a very long way.
Judge had an excellent June, .343, 9 homers, 25 RBIs before getting hurt in July. Just came back last week, .318, home run, 6 RBIs in 6 games. I think Judge will definitely get his call for venturing the rosters expand September 1st. To me, as much as I'd like to see Aaron Judge, and I think I'm not going to say he doesn't deserve the call-up, a guy I think who deserves it a little bit more, and I understand with a DH you can kind of go in any direction you want, but maybe you want to get Brian McCann some DH at bats, and that's for Gary Sanchez, who's had a good first week as catcher. To me, I would go Tyler Austin. You look at the way his career has gone. In last season, he hit just .240 in the minors, back in 14. Had 21 games in AA, 73 games in AAA. To me, you look at his season, .290 in Scranton, last 54 games, .321, 13 homers, 47 RBIs, .417 on base. You look at the way he's played since the second half of the season, last 21 games, .358, four homers, 15 RBIs, 482 on base. To me, I want to reward a guy like Tyler Austin who's battled, was a top prospect for a while. And not what Judge and Frazier and what those guys are, but he was still a high up prospect in the system. To me, I think he deserves the first crack. And, hey, he can play some first. He played some third over the weekend. He can play him there. I like the flexibility that Austin can give you. And I understand Judge, that nobody wants to watch Aaron Hicks anymore. He can play some outfield, too. I think he'll be up eventually. I'm not saying Aaron Judge shouldn't be up, but I love the way Austin has played throughout the entire season. And he's stayed healthy. He's performed. To me, I give him a shot. He's had an outstanding season, but I wouldn't dismiss Aaron Judge. I would think maybe he's the likely candidate, but I would go with Austin myself. Harrison Ford, Joe, tell us who's out there, how they can follow you on Twitter. If you got anything else working you're working on, feel free to share with us what you got going on.
Well, the listeners can follow me on Twitter. I'm there at HMartyr5 if you wanted to give me a follow. Been a little busy lately, so haven't been writing as much as I'd like to on the site, you know, unfortunately. But I would like to definitely get back as soon as I possibly can to looking forward to writing about this new era, really, in Yankees baseball. For my entire lifetime, I've just recently turned 23. The Yankees have been the perennial powerhouse in the league for as long as I can remember and as long as I've been alive, and now we're finally seeing really a new era of Yankees baseball begin for the first time in my lifetime. So I really look forward to writing about and talking about this new team and really seeing what the Yankees can become with all these young players and these prospects and moving on from guys that we spoke about tonight like Alex Rodriguez and Mark Teixeira.
Absolutely. Give Harrison a follow on Twitter when he does come back. Read his work. He does some good stuff. Harrison, again, thanks for joining me, and we'll talk again real soon.
Thanks again, Ricky. Always fun being a part of the show.
That's Harrison Martyr, frequent co-host / staff writer. Harrison's made great contributions to the show. And I would agree with him. Again, I think Aaron Judge should get a call-up. Remember, I think he's going to be here September 1st. I think Tyler Austin will be here September 1st. But to me, Austin has been consistent all season long when he's been healthy. Judge just got back. I think you're going to give him a little bit. And we're not asking him. He's not going to be there 2 months. We're there a couple more weeks until the rosters expand. But I'll be interested to see how Brian Cashman in the front office handles the situation of who might get that call-up. But, again, the big news, of course, Mark Teixeira retiring at the end of the season. You have the situation with Alex Rodriguez. And, again, I think the Yankees handled that as well as they could have. Everybody saved a little face here. A-Rod gets his money. Yankees don't flat out release him. And I think if he does stay in that instructional position, he's going to do a great job. Because you hear all the time about he helps all the younger players. They look up to him. And you think it right now, and you have a chance to teach Gleyber Torres, Jorge Mateo, Tyler Wade, guys like even Miguel Andujar. There are a lot of good young players Alex Rodriguez can instruct, can even mentor. I think he's going to be great in that role. So I love the role they came up for him. Because I think if he does stay in that role and he does not come back and play again, he's one of those guys where I think he can excel there. And we've seen over time, he's done a good job of carrying his image in the last couple of years. He's done a good job for Fox last year. I enjoyed listening to him in the World Series do some of the analyst work there during the playoffs. With Fox, I think if he's back in that role again, he'll do a great job. He's excellent at the broadcasting gig. He's got a good post-career ahead of him. The question's going to be over time, how is he viewed? I think it's different from Bonds and Clemens, but then because I think the line and the chain, not once, but twice. Once you can maybe get over. Twice? I don't know. There's a lot of shadiness, and we've talked about that on the show the last couple of seasons when we've done these conversations. I'm not the biggest Alex Rodriguez fan. I admit it. Remember last year I said the guy wouldn't hit 10 home runs, and just hitting over. But he made me look bad. Made me eat a lot of crow on this show. But I don't view him quite in a positive light as a lot of people would. If I did go to the game on Friday, I would give him an applause. I wouldn't give him a standing ovation. I don't think he deserves a plaque in Monument Park. But I do think he has good moments as a Yankee. It didn't look like that way early on. And remember, he opted out of that deal and got the bigger deal on top of it. But 09 was a special postseason that he had, and you can't take that away from him. I don't look at the home run record differently, but I look at that 09, and that was special that he did. And really, like Cashman said, they'll win the World Series without him. We're going to get you set now. Coming up, Yankees-Red Sox, three-game series at Fenway Park. Red Sox and Yankees haven't played since the first series of the second half, and the Red Sox have looked a little different. And of course, they made all those trades. Didn't go out and make that big trade. Everybody thought Chris Sale, maybe. That did not happen. They made some call-ups. Andrew Benintendi is now up, one of their top prospects. So just like the Yankees called up top prospects, the Red Sox have done that and are doing that right now with Benintendi. But they have struggled a little bit. And look at what their situation might be. It'll be interesting to watch how they perform coming up. Again, feel free to give us a call, 347-324-5455. Again, 347-324-5455. Tweet us on Twitter at YJY Radio Show, at YankSoyardFS, or tweet me on Twitter at Rickinator555. And joining me now, I believe, on the line is staff writer over at the Red Sox fan site, BotoxInjection.com. Please welcome to the show Noah Small. Noah, welcome to the show. How are you tonight?
Hey, I'm doing good, Rick. Thanks.
Absolutely happy to have you, Noah. So before we get into the Red Sox discussion, I want with A-Rod coming in at Fenway Park for the final time, he's not going to get the Jeter ovation and everything like that. But up there in Red Sox Nation, if A-Rod does play this week, and maybe plays the field, you heard Mark Scherer hint that earlier today, maybe that does happen. How do you think Red Sox fans will look at A-Rod, and how do you view A-Rod, his career from a Red Sox perspective?
You know what, that's a good question, and I think that it really depends fan to fan. I think obviously here in Boston, we're not real excited whenever we see the Yankees come into town, especially whenever A-Rod takes the field. He's going to get booed more than likely. But you know what? You have to look at him as an overall player and as the achievements that he's made in the MLB, even though, you know, obviously there's some clouds that hang over those achievements because of steroids and because of the different accusations. But I mean, he's an incredible player. He's definitely a guy that deserves a lot of credit for what he's done regardless. I think that because of the history that we have with him, we have with the Yankees, you know, everybody remembers the brawl he had with Jason Varitek. There's a lot of different moments that stand out, and he's really contributed a lot to the rivalry that's gone on between the Red Sox and the Yankees. And so I think for those reasons, you know, there's still some hard feelings, some you know, we definitely aren't his number one fan, that's for sure. So I think it depends fan to fan. You know, there's going to be fans that are going to be booing him if he does step onto the field, and yet I think there's some fans that might, you know, not like Jeter, but definitely myself included, I would respect his achievements and, you know, maybe not give him a standing ovation, but I wouldn't be out there booing.
Yeah, you mentioned the Varitek thing, swatting the ball to Arroyo as well, like we talked about earlier. Ryan Dempster hitting him on purpose a couple of years ago.
Right, right. Oh, yeah, I remember that.
There's been a lot of moments with A-Rod in Boston, and I hope he gets kids to at least get in the lineup, maybe even play the field, who knows. But it's interesting, and then we'll see how the Yankees handle Ortiz back at Yankee Stadium a month from now. That'll be another interesting thing we'll get into at a later time.
Sure.
But, no, let's look at the way the Red Sox have played lately. As I mentioned, they've been on a long West Coast trip. They split with the Angels, split with Seattle, and then lost 2 out of 3 to the Dodgers. What did you take away from that long road trip? Because that's a long time for any team to be out there playing 11 consecutive road games on the other coast.
Right, yeah. Well, the number that was getting thrown around a lot around here before the road trip was that the Red Sox are going to be playing 41 of their last 63 games on the road. And so obviously being away from the safe haven that is Fenway Park for the Red Sox, their numbers are just, especially offensively, are just ridiculous there. A guy like Ortiz just absolutely rips the ball there. And the field is, you know, made for this team. And so being away from Fenway Park, that itself plays to a huge disadvantage to the Red Sox. And so with the road trip that they just went on, 11 games, they won 5, they lost 6. I think overall I can't be too disappointed. I think there were some games that they definitely let slip, but I also think they stole a couple games. I remember they scored 5 runs in the 9th inning, you know, to come back against the Angels. So a game like that where they really, you know, they kind of stole the game. So they haven't been playing well. That's just plain and simple. And, you know, it looked promising when we started the second half of the season. They came out and won 5 of 6 games. They took the series against the Yankees. And so things seemed to be headed in the right direction. And then they went on to lose, I think, even 7 out of 10 at one point. And that was obviously disappointing. Now we've gotten to an interesting part of the season where the Red Sox still have the best offense in baseball, but their offense has been sputtering a little bit and their pitching has improved. So it's a strange situation where they can't get it all working out at one time. The reasons for that, gosh, I mean, I just can't come up with any, and neither can, I don't think the coaching staff or really anybody that covers the team. It just seems like their situational offense or situational hitting, you know, making the right pitch at the right times or not making the right pitch. There's been a lot of, there's been a little bit of a blame game going on as well, as far as pitches that have been thrown that the coaches are saying, well, we told, you know, Stephen Wright not to throw the fastball to Albert Pujols, and he threw the fastball and he got hit out of the yard. So, you know, there's been certain things going on that just don't really make sense and have contributed to whether, you know, they're successful or not night in and night out. One game they'll score 9 runs, the next game they won't score any, and they'll only give up a run or two. So it's just a strange situation where you have a team that's not consistent and that struggles situationally, and I don't think the management has been, you know, it's not their fault. I think the coaching may be more to blame for that, but we have a lot more road games coming up, so hopefully we can make the most of this short homestand, and especially against the Yankees coming up.
Now, of course, the Red Sox, just like the Yankees, have one of the top farm systems in all of baseball. During that West Coast trip, they called up one of their top prospects, Andrew Benintendi, first-round pick out of Arkansas back in 2015, was taken with the 7th pick. Last night, he goes 3-for-4 with a couple RBIs in that loss to the Dodgers. What are your first impressions, Noah, of Benintendi, and how is he going to impact this lineup going forward?
Well, I think the kid is a stud. I don't think there's anybody who's going to, you know, argue that. I don't think anybody doubts that. He's really talented. He may be, you know, undersized, but he definitely has all the talent it takes to make it in the big leagues. He tore up the minor leagues. I think he went over 151 games in the minors. He batted something like 312, 20 home runs, over 100 RBIs and runs. And so that was a relatively quick, you know, trip through the minors, but he just tore it up wherever he was. I think now in the majors we're seeing that the hitting is not going to be a problem. Now, whether he's going to have major league power, you know, he showed some glimpses of power in the minor leagues. I don't know if he's going to be, you know, Mookie Betts type power where he's going to hit, you know, 30 home runs a year, but I definitely think he could hit, you know, 15, maybe even 20 home runs. He's showing a good eye at the plate, even though it's just been a few games and he's mainly played against righties. I think you could make the argument, and I would definitely make the argument, that he should be playing every day right now. You know, don't waste time putting in a guy like Brock Holt, put in a guy that can contribute more. And Benintendi looks to be that player. I think that there's a chance that going into next season he's going to struggle. I think he was probably rushed a little bit more than, you know, would have been ideal, but I think the situation called for it. And, you know, he got the green light from the organization, from the staff, from Dombrowski. So he's up and he's contributing. I think that without a doubt going forward, he should be your everyday left fielder.
So what does that mean now for a guy like Yoan Moncada? I know Yankee fans watch him because there was a bidding war between those two teams and Moncada signed with the Red Sox. Hit the ball well in Double-A, 285 in 34 games, but I understand, Noah, that he's now had an injury that's maybe set him back from maybe even getting promoted or speeding up his time to the majors.
Yeah, it looks like he had a grade 1 sprain on his left ankle, if I'm correct on that. I heard something earlier. And so, yeah, I mean, he's going to miss a little bit of time. I don't think it's anything that serious, but it definitely impacts whether or not he's going to get called up, I think, because, you know, recently, obviously there was buzz around him because he got pulled from a game, and then, you know, we heard he was taking ground balls at third base. Third base is a position that we're weak at right now, with Travis Shaw not exactly living up to what we had thought coming into the season. So, yeah, I think it definitely could delay his promotion. Personally, though, that's okay with me. I don't really want to see him this season. I just think that he's such, you know, I mean, the midseason report, I think Baseball America had him ranked the number one prospect in the entire league. So you have a kid that's a really valuable asset, whether it be in a trade or, you know, just to bring up to fill the shoes of a guy like Ortiz, who's going to be gone next season. And so rather than rush him, like, you know, the Red Sox in recent years have had a little bit of history doing, whether it's Jackie Bradley, even Bogarts. Pedroia struggled in his first year up here. So they've had a history of bringing guys maybe a little too quick and then those guys going on to struggle. So I think with Moncada, you already brought up Benintendi. Unless we were to make the playoffs and we're making a significant push, then similar to Bogarts, maybe you consider, okay, well, bring Moncada up even for, you know, maybe just a guy off the bench. But I don't think you bring him up for right now unless that's the case. I don't think you call him up in September. That's just my opinion, but I, you know, there's obviously the possibility they do that. I personally wouldn't. I'd wait till next season. But, you know, I think we ride with Benintendi and see what he can offer. And then if we make the playoffs, maybe then you consider calling up a guy like Moncada.
Talking live with Noah Small from Botox Injection here on the Yanks Yard Radio Show. I'm your host, senior staff at Ricky Hewer, getting you set for Yankees-Red Sox three-game series that begins tomorrow night at Fenway Park. Before we look at the three pitching matchups, let's take a look at the tail of the tape where each team is in the standings. Right now, the Yankees at 56-55, 7.5 games behind the Baltimore Orioles in the East. Meanwhile, the Boston Red Sox are 60-50, 3 games behind the Orioles. Baltimore is off tonight. They take on Oakland. Right now, Tampa Bay and Toronto are underway in a ballgame. We'll get to the score on that in a second. Let's first look at the wild card and see where it stands there. The Blue Jays right now have the first wild card spot, a game and a half ahead of the Tigers. Red Sox are a half game back. Seattle is 3.5 back, but Seattle hosts Detroit this week. Big opportunity for the Mariners, who swept through a 1-3 straight over the Angels this weekend. They can make a little bit of a statement here. Astros have slipped a little bit. They're 4 back. They're at Minnesota right now, and the Yankees are 5 games back. That score, by the way, 4-4, 5-6. Between Tampa Bay and Toronto at this moment. Let's take a look at the three pitching matchups, and we start with tomorrow night's game, 7:10 Eastern, first pitch on YES in New York, Nesson in Boston. MLB Network carries the game nationally. Luis Severino takes the ball for the Yankees. He's 1-6 with a 6.02 ERA, but he's back in the rotation. He takes on Rick Porcello for the Red Sox. Porcello is 14-3 with a 3.46. And Noah, I don't think anybody thought that. We look at the Red Sox right now, and Stephen Wright has had his good moments, and David Price has really struggled. You can look at Rick Porcello as one of the more consistent starters in the Red Sox this year, and after they gave him that extension early last year after they got him in the trade with Detroit, I don't think anybody would expect that we'd be talking about Porcello and the way he's been really consistent for the Red Sox this year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, I've been a huge critic of Porcello because of the contract he received and then how poorly he started out with us. Obviously, the second half of last season, he turned it on and kind of found his groove, and this season has just been a continuation of that. This season, I think you have to look at Wright at being the team's ace, the Red Sox ace, so far, and then you look at Porcello really being that number two guy falling in line right behind Wright, and David Price has been kind of absent in any sort of leadership role, any sort of consistency, and so it's a surprise the way it's worked out, no doubt about it. And it's a bigger surprise whenever you look at a guy like David Price that was given so much money. And, you know, he's been so successful throughout his career. Huge red flags this season, the way he's performed and kind of his mentality, how he approaches the game. Can he handle the pressure in Boston? That's a concern I have for him. And so Porcello's been proving that he's a guy that can. He's a guy that can come out game after game and be consistent, give you innings. And Wright, you know, he's a knuckleballer. So while he's been good, there's always the chance, you know, if the knuckleballer doesn't have his A game, he's going to get absolutely crushed. And so if it's not floating, if it's not dancing the right way, it's going to be scary for the Sox. So Porcello is really he's been a key so far for him. To, you know, they're not, I'd say they're underperforming the team as a whole, but if they didn't have Porcello perform the way he is, I think there'd be a much greater concern. And so Porcello is definitely a key moving forward as well.
And Porcello, the month of July, 5-0 with a 2.57 ERA, had a complete game. Opponents only hit .248 against him. Now, he lost his last start against Seattle, but he was had a good start there, 8 innings, gave up 3 home runs. Not a bad outing there. He's also been really good at home this year. 10-0 with a 3.21 ERA at Fenway Park in 11 starts, so tough to beat this guy at home. And against the Yankees this season in 2 starts, a 1.93 ERA, just 3 runs allowed in 14 innings, and only 1 home run to show for us. The Yankees haven't had much success against Porcello this year. Some of the numbers for the Yankees against Porcello: Aaron Hicks has a couple of home runs against them, 4-for-15, but we'll see if Hicks is in the lineup. Ellsbury, 4-29 with 4 solo home runs. Brett Gardner, 276 with a home run. Chase Headley is 5-for-16 with a home run. But A-Rod, 3-for-20. Teixeira, 4-for-26. As for Luis Severino, of course, he made his debut last year against the Red Sox. And coming back in the bullpen, he was really sharp for the Yankees. Those 2 bullpen games. Comes in against the Mets after an inconsistent outing by Chad Green. And he was dominant. 4 1/3, one unearned run, 1 hit, 5 strikeouts. Slider was moving. Fastball was electric. Got out of that big bases loaded situation in the 7th inning. He got Jay Bruce to strike out. Got Conforto to strike out to end that inning. Today he's ready again for the rotation. He had a strong moment in AAA. Had a rough start to his year this year. But you have to find out what Luis Severino can do down the stretch for this team. He showed glimpses of it last year. Showed a glimpse of it the other night. So let's see what Severino can do in this rotation going forward, leading into next year. Because he's going to be one of those guys the Yankees rely upon again. They tried to rely on him earlier this year. It didn't work. So maybe he ends the year on a much better note. Some of the numbers for the Red Sox and Severino: David Ortiz, 3-for-5, all 3 hits, home runs. So maybe it's a given David Ortiz might go deep again. Dustin Pedroia is 1-for-3 with a 2-run homer, 1 homer and 2 RBIs. Severino did face the Red Sox earlier this year at the stadium, 6 2/3, 4 runs, 5 hits, struck out 9. One of his better starts in that first half, considering how bad it was, but he did get the loss in that one as well, went 0-6 before being sent down to AAA. I'm going to go with the Red Sox here. I do think it's going to be a close game, and I do think Severino, I think he's starting to find that confidence again. And you got to go with Rick Porcello at home. You also go with the fact that Dave Ortiz is going to find a way to impact one of these games. So I'm going to go with the Red Sox. I'll say 6-3. They find a way to take game number 1. Noah, what are your thoughts on this matchup between Severino and Porcello, and what's your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I think the Red Sox come away with a win here. I mean, they're in Fenway. Like you said, Ortiz is usually pretty good at Fenway. In fact, he's great at Fenway, but he has been struggling the second half of the season in the 20 games or so. And so I would think, you know, a game against the Yankees where, you know, there's all the A-Rod drama, the Teixeira drama, I think he comes up big in this game. And, you know, that, granted, if he plays, because, you know, you never know what's going on there with Ortiz. So if he's in the lineup and he plays, I think he's going to have a big game. And I think Porcello probably shuts down a pretty sorry Yankees lineup. And, you know, Severino, I would feel bad if I was, a Yankees fan for the situation they got going on with that pitcher. I mean, he was pretty highly touted coming in, and he's had his bright spots, and he has a crazy good slider. But, you know, ERA over 6, like you said, I think he's 1-6 so far this season. So that's a pretty big disappointment so far. Maybe he starts to turn things around, but I think it's going to be a tough call for that to happen against the Red Sox team and against the best offensive baseball playing in one of the more hitter-friendly ballparks. So I'd say Red Sox, I'd say 7-2.
So let's take a look at game 2 in this series. Wednesday night, 7:10 Eastern on YES, NESN, ESPN has the game nationally. Mason Eovaldi goes for the Yankees. He's 9-8 with a 4.80 against Drew Pomeranz for the Red Sox. Pomeranz 8-9 with a 3.09 against this season with the Red Sox and the Padres. Now, Noah, you wrote something up on Bo Sox and Jackson about how the Red Sox aren't exactly happy with the Padres over the whole Pomeranz situation. Now, the Padres had an issue with the Colin Ray thing, where the Ray goes to the mall and Ray gets hurt, and now he's back in San Diego again. What have your impressions been on Pomeranz? Tell us what article you wrote about, because it seems like with him, since he's gotten to gotten to Boston, it's been one good start, one bad, one good, one bad, one good with it.
Yeah, Pomeranz, I was not a fan at all of that trade. You know, I wrote the article, and if you read it, you kind of probably got that understanding, that feeling, because I thought Anderson Espinosa was a, you know, he's a blue-chip prospect, somebody that you could really flip to get or, you know, add to a package to get somebody like a Chris Sale. And, of course, this season with the crazy situation, the Edward Scissorhand, you know, Chris Sale moment he had where he goes and he cuts up the jerseys, and then you go to find out that, yeah, the White Sox were willing to listen to offers on him. A package of a Benintendi and Anderson Espinosa probably could have been a good start, you know what I mean? So to come away with a guy like a Chris Sale rather than a Drew Pomeranz, just to start off with, kind of put a sour taste in my mouth with the deal. And then, of course, Pomeranz didn't exactly thrill anybody in his first start. And, you know, he had a better start his last outing. Still, you look and he has 6 walks. So, I mean, you can't get too excited there. You know, he hasn't come away with a win yet, even though the Red Sox did win 2 of the games. He's 0-2. So, you know, I don't know a whole lot to say about the trade other than I'm not a big fan of it. I think we gave up too much. I think that even if Anderson Espinosa doesn't turn out to be what a lot of, you know, scouts think he's going to be, I think he was ranked number 15 in the midseason prospect, you know, the scouts prospect list. If he doesn't turn out to be the stud that they think he is, I still think right now he's more valuable than what they got for him. He's more valuable than a Drew Pomeranz. So I think they kind of shorted themselves on that. And I think that Drew Pomeranz coming into the American League is going to struggle a whole lot more than, you know, the success he was having in San Diego. So I think there's a lot of things not to like about the trade, especially from a Boston perspective. And now with the whole, you know, did the Padres withhold information from the Red Sox regarding an injury? That just throws a whole another you know, wrinkle in the trade and a whole nother reason to not be excited about it. And, of course, with Ray, like you said, now he's having Tommy John surgery. The Marlins weren't too thrilled about that. So I think just trading in general with the Padres, you have to be a little bit skeptical of what exactly you're getting back and if you're getting, you know, an honest evaluation of him from the Padres. So there's a lot of reasons to not be too thrilled about it. Personally, I'm just not that thrilled. So, you know, only time will tell, though. Maybe Pomeranz can turn around. Maybe he can contribute for us. So I guess we'll just see.
I think when you take a look at the whole Pomeranz situation, I think at the same time, I think Espinosa was a bad spot for prospect to give up in that spot because, again, you could use him in the sale situation.
Right,
well,
yeah.
It's interesting to see what happened with that. He did face the Yankees back on July 2nd with the Padres. He was really good in that game. 7 innings, 1 run, 5 hits, struck out 7.
Right.
You know,
yep.
Padres in that game. So that is a factor to take a look at here going into the start. Some of the numbers for the Yankees against Pomeranz: Ellsbury 3-for-5 with a couple of doubles. But the only one was a home run against them, Brett Gardner. 2-for-6. Starling Castro has an RBI, and he's 0-for-5. Looking at Nathan Eovaldi here, who gets started for the Yankees. Eovaldi, a 5.23 ERA on the road this year, so not exactly good numbers going in. And he started again with giving up the long ball last time against the Mets. 7 innings, 4 runs, 5 hits, 5 strikeouts, 2 walks. Against that one inning that Eovaldi just can't even get through, gives up the solo homer to Kelly Johnson in the start of the inning, and then Jay Bruce in the 3-run homer in the 5th to sort of break that game open, give the Mets a 4-0 lead. Other than that, you look at Eovaldi's start, he threw 26 first-pitch strikes out of the 29 batters he faced, a pretty good number there. Command wasn't exactly bad, but the problem of Eovaldi's given up a lot of home runs this year, down 23 this season. Since the All-Star break, 2-2, with a 3.42 ERA, he has given up only allowed opponents hit 212, but he has given up 4 home runs in 26 and a third, and that's something to be a little bit concerned about. He has faced the Red Sox 3 times this year, twice as a starter, and he is 1-0, but that ERA is over 5, 8 runs in 14 and a third, including 2 home runs. The Red Sox, they're hitting 310. So not a lot of numbers lead you to pick Eovaldi here in this game. Some of the numbers: Dustin Pedroia, 5-for-13 with a home run. David Ortiz is 4-for-12. Brock Holt's got a couple RBIs. Xander Bogaerts has a couple RBIs as well, 3-for-14. I'm going to go with the Yankees here. I think Pomeranz might have the whole. He might. This might be the one bad start for him after the decent start minus the walk. Maybe this is one of those Yankee Red Sox. You got to have one Yankees Red Sox game that goes 4 hours, 9 innings, back and forth. Maybe this one's one of them, and I'll take a flyer here, and I'll go to the Yankees like 8-7. I think it might be one of those crazy games here. No, who do you like between Eovaldi and Pomeranz?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty accurate prediction. I mean, I'm going to take the Red Sox again. I'm actually going to take the Red Sox for a clean sweep. Maybe that's being a little too optimistic, but I think they're realizing just how difficult the final stretch of the season is going to be for them on the road. And I think against a team like the Yankees, of course the Yankees are going to want to try to, you know, spoil any Red Sox party, and especially any sort of momentum, you know, heading into the playoffs or a playoff push. So they're going to show up, but I think Pomeranz might settle down for this one. I know this game is going to be national televised. I think it's on ESPN. But I think that he's going to handle the pressure. I think he's going to come through. And I think this one will be a higher scoring game. I think maybe, 8-7 might not be a bad call. But I think the Red Sox are going to come away with it. Something interesting that's a little off topic, but I think you guys are throwing three righties in a row against us. And so a guy like Andrew Benintendi, who we've been – or I should say Farrell, has been not too thrilled, not too excited to put in against the lefty. He's been a little skeptical of it. I think that with the three righties, you're going to see him every game, and I think that's going to add a little bit of offensive punch. You know, we don't have Brock Holt out there, so I think you're going to see Andrew Benintendi in all three games, and I think that's going to add to the offensive ability the Red Sox are able to produce.
Moving on to the final game of the series, Thursday night, 7:10 Eastern. You catch the game on YES and on Nesson in Boston. Michael Fernandez gets the ball for the Yankees, 6-10 with a 5.17 against Stephen Wright for the Red Sox. Wright, 13-5 with a 3.01 and coming off a complete game three-hit shutout against the Dodgers on Friday, 9 strikeouts and 1 walk and a win. Wright has not lost since June 25th, but at times, when we worry about knuckleball pitchers, no, it's either they're really good or they're really bad, like in the case where you look at the Tigers. And you talked about the Pujols home run with the Angels. But Wright has been dominant against the Yankees this season, and that would, I think, lead him to the edge here, right?
Yeah, I think so. I would predict a pretty dominant game for Wright. I think that he's just been so consistent this year. And even though with the knuckleballer it's so, you know, hot and cold, you never know what you're going to get. But Wright, game after game, has been really a steady hand in the rotation. And so going against Pineda, I think that Wright definitely has not only the advantage, but a pretty significant advantage there. The Red Sox have the advantage. So I look for a pretty strong outing, maybe 7, 8, 9 innings. You know, a complete game is possible, but probably 7 or 8 innings of strong, you know, maybe 1 or 2 run baseball. And so I think with the Red Sox offense, that's going to be more than enough to get the win.
Right against the Yankees this season, 2-0 with a 2.40 ERA, 4 runs in 15 innings, 11 strikeouts, and the Red Sox and the Yankee hitters are hitting just 122 against Wright this season. Back on July 15th, he did give up 3 runs over 6 innings. The Yankees had a tough time getting a hit at all in that game. It took them to a 5th inning, I believe, to get a hit, and the Yankees got 3 runs in the 6th inning, but could not come back fully to get the win. So we'll see where Stephen Wright shows up. I expect a dominant one coming off the complete game against the Dodgers. Some of the numbers against Wright for the Yankees. Teixeira's 1-for-11 with a solo home run. A-Rod 1-for-5. McCann's 2-for-8. And Brett Gardner 1-for-11, but that one hit also a home run. So we'll see what happens with Wright. As for Michael Pineda, good start against the Indians last time out, but the Yankees gave him a lot of runs. 6 innings, 4 runs, 6 hits, 6 strikeouts, 1 walk. Of course, the Yankees won Friday night's game 13-7. So the Yankees got out to that big 6-0 lead. But again, Pineda ran a little triple in the 5th, gave up the 3-run homer to Chris Jimenez of all players. Now they gave one up to Santana or Napoli. But nevertheless, Pineda did get into the 7th inning, did put up a decent outing. 16 first-pitch strikes, 23 batters. The command was much better. That is definitely a plus for him. But right now, Michael Pineda, you still don't know which guy you're going to get. Are you going to get the really good Michael Pineda? Are you going to get the really bad Michael Pineda, like the 4-walk start against the Rays? He's also been bad against the Red Sox this season. Pineda in 3 starts against Boston, 0-2 with a 5.06 ERA. He has only given up 9 runs in those 3 games. He's also in a 4 home run. So Pineda usually has his bad moments. 6 losses on the road, as I mentioned. Team saying you're 280. Not the numbers you want to see here for if you're a Yankee fan looking at this from a chance at a win. Mookie Betts with a couple of home runs, hitting 300, 6 for 20. Bogaerts, 286 with a home run and 3 RBIs. David Ortiz, 227, has a home run and 2 ribbies as well. Got to watch maybe Travis Shaw, who also has a home run and 3 RBIs. He's 4 for 12. I'm going to go with the same thing Noah said here. I'm going to go with the Red Sox. I think Wright's been, if you look at his knuckleball, if it's on point, the Yankees are showing they have a tough time hitting it this year. I think that plays into the equation. Pineda, not exactly known for big moments at Fenway Park, except bad ones like the whole Pine Car thing. So I'm going to roll with the Red Sox here. I think they take 2 out of 3. I'll go 8-2. I don't think this game's really that close. So I think Boston will take 2 out of 3. Although I did say the Yankees would lose the series to Cleveland. They didn't, so don't bank my predictions. But I get the feeling the Red Sox take 2 out of 3 here. We talked about the pitchers, so let's talk about some hitters. And as Noah mentioned with the lineup, we've got a lot of good hitters. Of course, David Ortiz, you mentioned that foot issue. But he's still having a great season, even though it's tailed off a little bit. Give me a hitter or two on the Red Sox you have your eye on going into the next installment of this rivalry.
Well, definitely, like I said, Andrew Benintendi. I think you're going to see him a lot during the series, and I think that he's going to, you know, probably come up in some big moments, and I think you're going to see a lot of production from him. Of course, he had a great night last night going 3 for 4, 2 RBIs. He had a great slide into home to get that run in. So I think that he's a guy that I don't know if I'd bank on him just yet. That might be a little, you know, over-enthusiastic, but I'd definitely be watching him to make a difference, and he's probably going to be batting out of the 9 spot again. So, you know, he's an interesting guy to keep your eye on. I think David Ortiz as well, as always, when you're playing in Fenway Park, when the Red Sox are playing in Fenway Park, you got to keep your eye on Ortiz. He's just so dominant there, and he has struggled the second half of the season, but I think he's going to start turning it around very soon. And maybe a guy like a Travis Shaw, or even Xander Bogaerts, who's struggled a little bit recently. I think those two guys, maybe not as much Shaw, but I think definitely a Bogaerts, you're going to see starting to heat up and turn it around.
On the Yankee side of things, I'm going to go with Gary Sanchez. Hits in 4 straight games. He's had a double in 3 straight games. He's shown the offense that everybody expected. He also has had. He's also shown good defense behind the plate since they moved him to the catcher spot in the 2 games that he was at catcher. He aged the first couple of games against the Nets. But so far, I've liked the way he's played behind the plate. And he's been one of those guys, the future of the Yankees, 23 years old. They're going to play him, I think, at catcher a little bit more. Now that A-Rod will be gone after Friday, you may see Brian McCann play a little more DH. So I'll give Sanchez the opportunities. And I like the way he's hitting the ball right now. Definitely not showing any jitters here in the majors. So I will look at Gary Sanchez here. I think he can have a good series, his first big installment of a rivalry. On the other side, I'm going to take a look here. We're going to go Chase Headley here in this one. Headley did have a couple of hits in the Mets series, struggled against Cleveland a little bit. Headley's also gone off to a rough start this month, 3 for 23 with a double. And 3 RBI, so Headley's not coming in on the best series. Against the Red Sox this season, 231 with a home run, 6 for 26. So I'm going to look at Gary Sanchez, I think, again, one of the young players on this team. You're going to see more young players, of course, as the season goes on. He's definitely created a nice spark. So I would look at that situation and say his best option. I'd also look at Headley looking to bounce back. If you look at, though, teams in terms of how the Yankees have fared against the Red Sox this season. I'll get to those in a second. But obviously, Carlos Beltran not being there anymore, I think that plays a factor. He has some good numbers against the Red Sox. A-Rod actually has most RBIs against Boston this year. He has 5 and 6 games. Also, one of the only 2 Yankees with multiple home runs, Brett Gardner being the other. So maybe A-Rod has a big series here as well in his last World Series at Fenway Park. No, let's take a look also at a couple of the Red Sox topics, and one being the bullpen. We know Dave Dombrowski has a bad track record of building bullpen. He goes out right before the deadline. He gets Fernando Abad, the lefty from the Twins, and, of course, Abad gives up a home run to Robinson Cano in his first game with the Red Sox. Kinsel is now back in the fold, and I think that's a plus. But Koji has been injured. They did get Brad Ziegler. What's the trust level in this bullpen, and what's your trust level in Dave Dombrowski in building a bullpen?
Well, yeah, I think those are two really separate things, at least the way I look at it. I think my trust in Dombrowski, just because of his track record, probably isn't too great. That being said, I think guys like Kimbrel and the different players he's gone out and get, the Zieglers and even Abad, I'm not a big Fernando Abad fan, but I think that when you bring in guys like that that are as good of relievers as those guys are, I don't think you can really criticize him too much. I think if there's reason to be concerned about the bullpen, it's a guy like Uehara who's just aging. Every day he looks, you know, another year older, and every time he steps onto the mound he looks older. So he's a guy I'd have some concern in. The overworked Tozawa, he's another guy I'm a little concerned with. But that being said, whenever you have a bullpen that you can boast has Kimbrel to close games, you have Zieglers to throw in your eighth inning, you have a number of guys, whether it's Matt Barnes, you know, you want to go with the Uehara Tozawa in the seventh inning, that's fine. Of course, there's Carson Smith who's out for the season, but whenever we get him back, that will be another guy to add to the mix. So there's a lot of arms there, a lot of really talented arms. And so it's been a little surprising the struggles they've had, you know, especially Kimbrel in close games or I guess what you call pressure situations. Not necessarily saves because, of course, a save, you can be up by 3 runs and it's still a save. That's not exactly a pressure situation. So I think there's more blame to be had and more lack of trust with the individual players in circumstances rather than, you know, management or Dave Dombrowski bringing in certain players or building a bullpen. I think overall, heading forward, I think now that some of the injuries are, you know, clearing up and you have a relatively healthy bullpen, I'm confident in it. I think moving forward that you have a lot of guys to work with, and I think that there's just too many talented pitchers to, you know, continue to have so much struggles, you know, nailing down games or solidifying wins.
Now, Kimbrel, of course, you mentioned, great and saved, not so much in non-save situations. Brad Zieglers, so far since the break, a 1.08 ERA, he's fared pretty well. Robbie Ross, even, you look at his number, 1.5 ERA in 10 appearances.
Yeah.
He's pitched well. Abad has struggled. Tadashi Tozawa is always inconsistent. That plays a factor as well. So the Red Sox, I think, it's just more about, Noah, maybe getting more consistency from the rotation, and they're getting it from Porcello. They're getting it from Wright more often than not. Rodriguez has looked okay since coming back. The real elephant in the room is, I know David Price had a couple good outings out on the West Coast, but ended with a clunker last night. And everyone's still wondering where the David Price is that they paid $200 million to.
Yeah, it's surprising to say the least. I think, you know, whenever I look at David Price, what he's done in a Boston uniform, it's really easy for me to just rip the guy apart. I mean, it's just, it's been embarrassing, really, game after game. He's even gone into the eighth inning or, you know, the seventh, eighth inning with a great lead, and then he's just collapsed and fallen apart and given up 4 or 5 runs and closed a game down. And it's not necessarily the pitch count that was getting high. He just, for some reason, there's something that he's not able to handle. And I'm starting to think, it's the pressure situations. Maybe it's the media and the scrutiny he receives here in Boston and from Boston fans. Of course, we don't have exactly, I'm sure like New York, a great amount of patience towards our players. And we can kind of ride them pretty hard if they're not performing, especially whenever there's a contract that's, you know, outrageous like the contract Price has. You know, similar to how Porcello was last year when he started out for us. I mean, nobody was a fan of Porcello. He was way overpaid and he was struggling. This season has been a similar tale, only in a greater fashion with Price. I think there's a chance we see Price improve. I think there's a chance next season he does. But I really am concerned because I don't think he has the mental strength. I don't want to go too hard on the guy, but there's something kind of missing, the, you know, go after, attack the hitters, the in-game mentality. And you can even hear it in the press conferences after the game. He's kind of somewhat passive. And so I'm concerned about whether or not he has what it takes to make it here in Boston. And, of course, we all know his postseason numbers are pretty bad and in stark contrast to what his regular season numbers are. And so I think that shed some light on the situation and kind of how, you know, in those spots, in those high pressure moments, he just turns into a puddle more or less. You know, it's not been great. And you know, I hope the best for him. I hope the best for the team that he can turn it around. But I wouldn't be confident in it. That's for sure.
Last question for you. Now, I mentioned kind of the Eri thing earlier, but how does with all the changes the Yankees have made over the last few weeks, how does Red Sox Nation view the moves that the Yankees have made, selling all these players, all the retirements, et cetera? How is it viewed up there?
I think from people that know baseball, people that understand it, I think we obviously realize it's the smart thing to do. That being said, with the season that we've had in the past couple of seasons, I mean, we came in ourselves in last place three out of the last four seasons. 2013, obviously, a total, you know, lightning in a bottle. So seeing the Yankees struggle, seeing them having to sell, we definitely get some enjoyment out of that because it hasn't been exactly rosy here. But I think they're doing the right thing. I think that they need to start transitioning into, you know, more of a younger team. They're getting rid of some of the contracts, obviously, of A-Rod and Teixeira, CeCe Sabathia soon. So Beltran, of course, they traded Miller and Chapman. So there's been a lot of trades, a lot of guys that are dropping off the roster. But I think overall it's probably for the best. This team needs to rebuild. I don't necessarily think they have to do it through their minor league system. Of course, through the Yankees, they'll just spend you know, a lot of money in free agency, and you'll see a revived team in the near future. But overall, I think it's probably, you know, for the best. I think that Yankees fans and Red Sox fan alike, even though they may not understand it, you know, the Yankees management, as hard as it is for them to admit defeat, I think they're making the right decision.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe you look at guys like Ben Tendi, Mankata in the future, and maybe the Yankees with Judge and Sanchez. Maybe they're the next faces of this rivalry. Again, they got a long way to go, but the rivalry is sort of missing the juice with David Ortiz leaving, Alex Rodriguez leaving, Derek Jeter gone, Mariano Rivera gone, Pedroia aging. I mean, they need more faces in this rivalry. Maybe they get some here in the next few years to bring the juice back.
I was just going to say, for sure, I think that this rivalry over the last few years has kind of died out, probably because the teams haven't been as successful. You know, in the early 2000s, this was a completely different situation. Every game was so nerve-wracking, and there's so much emotion in it. The last couple of seasons, it just hasn't been the case. In fact, I think there's even been a few games, whether it's in New York or in Boston, that the games haven't been sold out, and that was quite a rarity before. So I'm looking forward to these new faces, maybe adding a little bit of some oomph to the rivalry overall.
So before I let you go, tell listeners out there about what you got going on with Red Sox Injection. You mentioned your article earlier. But tell listeners out there how they can follow you and the site on Twitter.
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at 96_Smalls, Smalls with an S. And, we got a lot of fun stuff over at Bosox Injection. I definitely check it out. We have some really talented writers. And we try to cover pretty much anything that, is going on in Red Sox Nation, Red Sox News. And we try to do it from not necessarily a fan's perspective, I guess from a fan's perspective, but not in a homer's perspective, but a fan's perspective in that, you know, you basically get either the national media or you get the local guys that are covering the team, and then you get their perspectives. But sometimes the average fan and what they think is kind of left out. And, there's some common themes that just aren't discussed as much as I think they should be. And so a place like Bosox Injection over at FanSided, we're able to give you those viewpoints, a perspective from a fan. And yet we're still, we're not homers. We try to be unbiased whenever we look at the team and, try to be as accurate as we can if we make any predictions.
So absolutely, go take a look at Bosox Injection. Great site, covers all information on the Boston Red Sox. Noah, again, thanks for joining me. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk again soon. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks, man, for having me.
That's Noah Small from Bosox Injection. Talking Yankees Red Sox again, I think the interesting thing with the rivalry is maybe gets new faces, as I mentioned. The other thing to talk with the Red Sox, you can get a chance to talk about with Noah. Andy Ramirez is an interesting one here. He had some wrist issues. They emerged last night. He was out of the lineup. Ramirez has had a much better year than last year. 14 home runs, 62 RBIs. His attitude's been better. His on base is over 350. But if he's out, that could be a big problem, too. He's also had bad numbers against the Yankees this year, hitting only 194. It's something to monitor. About 10 minutes left in the show, so we're going to do our minor league update. Of course, a couple of interesting notes before we get to it. Of course, the New York Penn League has their All-Stars out today. You have Staten Island, Drew Bridges, Nick Solak, their second-round pick. Those are the two, and Colton Mahoney. So three All-Stars make the team, so congrats to those three players. They'll be in the New York Penn League All-Star game. Scranton Wilkes-Barre has the night off, as they have won 9 in a row. They've been really impressive so far this season. They'll be back at it tomorrow. Chad Green gets to start there. Here's what happened. Here's what is going on tonight. Out in Richmond, the AA Trenton Thunder with a 7-4 lead. That game in the top of the 8th. Trenton looking for their 73rd win of the year. Mark Payton, a 3-run homer in the 7th, which has broke the tie. He's got 70 RBI. He's got 33 RBI this year. Dustin Fowler, his 70th RBI this season, 1-for-5. Starting tonight was Ronald Herrera, 3 earned runs, number 5 1/3, struck out 3 and walked 2. So Thunder looking for win number 73. And Trenton coming into tonight's game looking for their third straight win. Of course, they're in second because Redding has been so good this year. Down in with Tampa, they're playing Clearwater tonight. Clearwater Threshers. They were down 11-0 in this game. They've rallied back to make it 11-9 in the top of the 8th. Jorge Mateo has a home run in this game, a 3-run shot in the 7th, part of a 7-run inning. Gleyber Torres with 3-4 of an RBI. Zach Gainer has a couple of hits in this game as well. So Tampa getting right back in next year. Rough night for Nestor Cortez. 5 runs, 9 hits over 2 innings. Jose Mason released, 6 runs over 2 1/3. So Tampa trying to mount the comeback, 11-9 in the 8th. They are 65-46 this year. Game just went final between Charleston and Rome. The River Dogs beat the Rome Braves 4-3 to go to 63-50. Ricardo Ferreira picked up a 4-hit night, including a couple of RBIs, a double and triple, home run shy of the cycle. And Brian Mitchell got the start tonight. First rehab start for him, so hopefully Brian Mitchell gets his way back to the big leagues real soon. 3 innings, 3 runs, 3 hits, 2 strikeouts, and 2 walks on 2 strikeouts, no walks, a couple home runs, actually. 41 pitches, 29 strikes. Daniello Gomez picked up the win in relief, and what a great game he had. 6 innings, 1 hit, 3 strikeouts, 1 walk. Gomez 4-2 for Charleston this season. Again, they improved their record to 63-50. Down Staten Island, they defeat the Lowell Spinners 4-1. Chad Martin, 9 strikeouts, 5 walks, 1 run, 2 hits over 5 innings. Bullpen between Josh Roeder and Chad Taylor, 2 hits allowed over the final 4 innings, including 6 strikeouts in a win. Drew Bridges, we mentioned, the All-Star, a couple RBIs, 3-for-4 in this game, and the other 2 ribbies from Timmy Robinson, who went 2-for-4 with a 2-run homer in the first, with a solo shot in the first inning. Part of a 2-run inning by the Staten Island Yankees, so they're now 28-21. Down in Pulaski, 3-0 to Greenville. 4 hits for Pulaski. Blake Rutherford, 1-for-2 in this game. He's now up to 408. Juan Jimenez took the loss. The big issue from this game, and it's not, I guess it depends on how you view, is what's going on with Blake Rutherford. Of course, Pulaski had a lot of doubles. They had a lot of cancellations because of bad weather down there. Rutherford is the interesting story on this. He left the game early by tweaking his knee. Of course, Jarrah Wright, who who covers Pulaski, was on this. You can follow her at Jarrah Wright. She writes at Pinstripe Classic Media Relations for Pulaski Yankees. This is what she tweeted about less than an hour ago. Update on Rutherford. He tweaked his knee, it's nothing serious, and he should be back to normal within 1 or 2 days. That's a huge sigh of relief if Rutherford is healthy, because obviously he's been playing so well in rookie ball, and you try to avoid injuries if you can. So. Hopefully Rutherford is okay. So that's your minor league update. We mentioned how good Judge has been. Clint Frazier, of course, his first home run Saturday night against Lucas Giolito. I was watching that game on MILB.TV, and the bat speed from Frazier, I was very impressed. And he hits that ball a mile. Aaron Judge hit it to center fielder there with that grand slam. Those two could definitely be a factor in years to come. So something to keep an eye on there. And Jordan Montgomery was great yesterday as well. But he's had 2 good AAA starts. With Scranton. We've got about 5 minutes left. We want to remind you can follow us on Twitter at YGY Radio Show, at YankSquareYardSS. Follow me on Twitter at Rickinator555. Like us on Facebook. Search YankSquareYard, the like button. All of our articles are there. Some of the articles to keep an eye on, Aaron Dortch writes about how A-Rod and Tex editing exiting in the saddest fashion. Evan Halfheimberger writes about, we talk about the Aaron Judge story, which you can read about. He says Judge the obvious choice to replace A-Rod again. I wouldn't blame the Yankees for making that choice. I still think Tyler Austin deserves it. He's had an excellent season. Evan has more on Jordan Montgomery being one step in the Yankees' rotation. What's next for A-Rod? Phil Ocrey has more on a quiet ending to A-Rod's polarizing career. Mike Calandrillo has more on the long goodbye. So a lot of A-Rod coverage we have on the site right now. We'll have more in the days to come. So keep an eye on that. So obviously we're going to be keeping focus on A-Rod and Teixeira. So again, Teixeira to me, I would do that contract again. I understand it's a big contract, but I think at the same time, he was good defensive, great defensively at first base, good years offensively, and runner-up MVP in 09. And I think if he'd stayed healthy in 2015, would have had an MVP caliber year. For A-Rod, again, I don't think you can look past the lying and the cheating. He should be remembered. Obviously, the great 2009 was going to keep him in the good graces of a lot of Yankee fans, and rightfully so. To me, though, I would vote for Bonds, Clemens. I might vote for A-Rod, but I would reconsider that because I think he's done a lot of other stuff. And maybe you got to give him credit. The way he's rehabilitated his image the last couple of years has been incredible. He does a great job for Fox winning the postseason last year. Definitely back in a good grace for the baseball, which is a good thing. I think the Yankees handled this well with the whole press conference. And finding a way to have him be an instructor, because I think he can do good things if he's in that role next year, helping out some of these younger players. But I would be interested to see what happens going forward. What will happen on Friday? We'll have more on A-Rod coming up on our next show. Thursday night, we'll be talking about the Yankees and the Rays. Rays coming to the Bronx for three, and of course, being A-Rod's final game Friday. So we'll have more on that Thursday. Maybe more details will come out. Will A-Rod play the field? Will A-Rod play shortstop for an inning on Friday? That would be interesting. Maybe you saw Mark Teixeira maybe say on Mike and Mike this morning. Maybe he'll play some third in Fenway. I mean, that could be an option as well. I mean, if you're going to get A-Rod's last game, I think he's got to play the field, given that opportunity. It's definitely interesting. Also, a great weekend next week. If you have tickets to any of these games next week, whether it be A-Rod's final game Friday, but there's two great games going on this weekend. Saturday, you got they're honoring the 1996 World Championship team, 20-year anniversary of that. On Sunday, it's Mariano Rivera Day. Mariano Rivera going to be honored, of course. He's my favorite Yankee player of all time. So obviously that'll be great to see Mo have his day. He's had that retirement tour, which I was happy to see that happen in his final year. But he's going to get his plaque in Monument Park, which will be great to see. He definitely deserves it. People, if you heard Hal Steinbrenner say on the Michael Kay show that he would consider the plaque, if it were me, and again, I understand where Hal's coming from, I wouldn't give A-Rod the plaque. I mean, I think he did good things for the Yankees, but I think there's just too much extracurriculars to a plaque. But again, they give a lot of people plaques. I don't know if I'd give it to A-Rod. But again, a lot of great moments coming up this weekend. 20th anniversary of the 96 team, Rivera's Monument, Monument Park. And, of course, A-Rod's last game on Friday. We'll preview the series as well Thursday. We'll talk about this series as well. Again, my thanks to Harrison Marder for joining me to talk about A-Rod and what's next for the Yankees. And, of course, Noah Small from Bosox Injection for joining me. Follow Bosox Injection on Twitter. Their editor, Brandon Nickel, does a great job. Shout him out here as well. Again, we'll be back Thursday night after the game. We'll preview this series and look ahead. We'll recap this series and we'll preview the upcoming series this weekend, when the Yankees are back home to take on the Tampa Bay Rays. So from all of us at Yank School Yard, for our two co-editors, Evan Halpine-Berger, and for Mike Calandrillo, for Phil Ocrey, for Aaron Dortch, for Harrison Marder, frequent staff writer, co-host, Josh Levin, Dan Deschino, for Tyler Churchman, I'm your host, senior staff editor, Richard Keeler, reminding you to have a great week. Enjoy this series, and we'll be back Thursday night to recap this one and look ahead to the Yankees-Rays series this weekend, and Alex Rodriguez's final game in pinstripes on Friday.